On the evening of the 30th of November 1948, a couple strolling along Somerton Beach saw a man reclining on the sand. His head was resting against the sea wall, with his legs extended and his feet crossed. He looked relaxed, maybe even drunk, an impression that was compounded when he stretched out his right arm, then let it drop limply to his side. The couple thought he might be trying to smoke a cigarette. His clothes didn't seem suitable for the beach. He was smartly dressed, with immaculately polished shoes. He didn't have a hat, which, in the 40s, was unusual. Another couple walking on the beach a little later also saw him. By this time, the street lights had come on, and the man didn't appear to move during the half hour in which he was in view. They assumed from his prone position that he was drunk or asleep. There were mosquitoes swarming around his face, and the couple joked that he must be dead to the world not to notice them. Before long, it would be discovered that the man on the beach was indeed dead. His identity, and how he died, have remained a mystery for almost 70 years. He came to be known as the Somerton Man, or, in Australia, the Unknown Man. I'm Rowan Molyneux, and you're listening to Oddity, the podcast about all things strange and unexplained. Early the next day, one of the people who had seen the man the evening before went down to the beach for a morning swim. When he emerged from the water, he saw a small group gathered around something by the seawall. As he drew closer, he realised that they were looking down at the man from last night. He was lying in exactly the same position, with his head leaning against the wall and his feet crossed. A half-smoked cigarette was now lying on the collar of his coat. When his body was searched by the authorities, he was found to have no ID on him, no wallet or cash. In his pockets were a bus ticket from Adelaide, a comb, a half-empty packet of Juicy Fruit chewing gum, an Army Club cigarette packet containing 7 Kensitas cigarettes, and a quarter-full box of matches. He also had an unused second-class rail ticket from Adelaide to Henley Beach. The pathologist determined that the man was about 40 to 45 and in top physical condition. He was 5'11", clean-shaven, with hazel eyes, fair to gingery hair turning slightly grey at the temples, and hands which had never done manual labour. His calf muscles were well-developed, and his toes were oddly shaped, almost pointed, leading to theories that he may have been a ballet dancer. All of the labels had been cut out of his clothes, and the lining of one of his pockets had been repaired with orange thread. The fact that he carried no identification led the police to believe he had committed suicide. The autopsy found that the pupils of his eyes were unusually small. His brain, kidneys, and liver were congested, and the spleen was 3 times larger than normal. In his stomach, blood was found, mixed with the remains of a pasty he had eaten a few hours before he died. The pathologist concluded that the death could not have been natural. All evidence pointed towards poisoning. But despite extensive testing, no foreign substance was found in his body. The pasty, his last meal, was not believed to be the source of the poison. A plaster cast was made of his head and shoulders, and his body was preserved using formaldehyde. Around 8 people came forward suggesting that they knew who the Somerton Man was, but none of the identification attempts were fruitful. The papers initially reported that the man was one E.C. Johnson. However, Johnson showed up alive and well on the 31st of December. The unknown man's photograph was circulated internationally, along with his fingerprints, but no matches were made, and his teeth couldn't be identified from any dental records. On the 14th of January 1949, a suitcase was discovered at Adelaide Railway Station. It had been checked into the cloakroom on the 30th of November, and stored there unclaimed since. Police believed it to be the property of the man on the beach. Inside were some clothes, a shaving kit, an electrician's screwdriver, and some stenciling equipment, the type which is normally used for stenciling boxes of cargo. There was also some orange thread of a type not readily available in Australia, the same thread used to repair the pocket of the unknown man's trousers. As with the clothes he had been wearing, the labels had been removed from the clothes in the suitcase. However, the police found variations on the name T. Keane written on a few items, along with three dry cleaning marks. There was no record of any missing person with the name T. Keane, and police thought that the Keane tags may have been left on the clothes deliberately, in an attempt at misdirection. The contents of the suitcase did, however, provide one useful bit of information. A coat made using a certain stitch only used in the United States. Incoming train records led police to believe that the Somerton man arrived at Adelaide Station via the overnight train from either Melbourne, Sydney or Port Augusta. He bought a ticket for the 10:50 to Henley Beach, but didn't use it, instead taking a bus to Glenelg, near to Somerton Beach. During the inquest, a professor of physiology and pharmacology testified regarding deadly poisons which would leave no trace. He refused to name them openly, in case a member of the public decided to take advantage of their deadly, yet effectively untraceable nature, instead writing the names on a piece of paper for the coroner. The Somerton man could have obtained poison in order to take his own life. However, not everything points to this conclusion. The fact that he had Kensitas brand cigarettes in an army club packet could possibly suggest that someone had replaced his cigarettes without his knowledge. It wasn't unheard of for people to disguise cheap cigarettes by putting them in a more expensive brand's packet, but in this case, Army Club was the less expensive brand. It was suggested that an undetectable poison lacing his cigarettes could deliver a deadly dose quickly enough for him to only smoke half of it, hence the partially smoked cigarette resting on his collar. Another strange element was noticed by Professor of Pathology John Cleland, who commented on the immaculate condition of the man's shoes. They certainly didn't look like the shoes of a man who had been walking around train stations and seaside suburbs all day. It almost seemed like the unknown man hadn't walked to the beach, but had instead been transported there and left, either dead or close to death. This theory would account for the fact that there was no evidence of the convulsions and vomiting which frequently accompany poisoning. Professor Cleland also found something even weirder. In the fob pocket of the man's trousers, that is, a small tucked-away pocket intended for a watch, he found a small scrap of paper, rolled up tight. The paper appeared to have been taken out of a book, and was printed with the words, "Tamam Shud," roughly meaning, "It is ended." It was thought to have been the last words of the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam, a book of 12th century poetry. The police put out an appeal for information, and finally, on the 23rd of July, a local man came forward. In December of the previous year, just a few days after the unknown man had been found, he and his brother-in-law had gone for a drive in his car, which he habitually parked near Somerton Beach. His brother-in-law had spotted a copy of the Rubaiyat on the floor near the rear seats. They had both silently assumed it belonged to the other, and so it had been sitting in the glove compartment for the last 8 months. After reading about the public appeal in the newspaper, their memories had been jogged. And sure enough, when they opened the mysterious book, the last words had been torn out. Inside the back cover, there were indentations, which could be identified as an unlisted phone number, another number, and a series of letters, possibly some coded message. Attempts at deciphering the lines were unsuccessful, although it was suggested that the rows of letters could in fact be shorthand rather than a code. The unlisted phone number was found to belong to a nurse called Jessica Thompson, who lived about 5 minutes' walk from where the unknown man's body was found. When the police interviewed her, she told them she didn't know the dead man. She had no idea why he might have her phone number. She did, however, tell them that a mysterious man had been asking her neighbours questions about her. A police detective later described her as completely taken aback, to the point of giving the appearance that she was about to faint. After she looked at the cast, she immediately looked away, and wouldn't look at it again. Jessica told investigators that she had been working in Sydney during the Second World War. At that time, she had given a copy of the Rubaiyat to an army lieutenant she was seeing called Alf Boxall. After the war, she moved away, and when Boxall tried to contact her, she told him that she was now married, although she didn't actually marry her partner Prosper until 1950, as he had to get a divorce from his current wife first. Jessica and Alf didn't speak again. It seemed safe to assume that the Somerton man was in fact Alf Boxall. But in July of 1949, he was found alive and well in Sydney, and was even able to produce the copy of the Rubaiyat given to him by Jessica, completely intact. In 1949, the Somerton man was buried in Adelaide's West Terrace Cemetery. A while after the burial, flowers began appearing on the grave. A woman seen leaving the cemetery was questioned, to no avail. More witnesses came forward in following years. The receptionist of a hotel opposite Adelaide train station reported that a strange man had stayed there for a few days before the unknown man's death, checking out on the 30th of November, the day that the man was seen lying on the beach. The receptionist remembered that the guest spoke English and carried a small black case. Another hotel employee told the receptionist that they had looked inside the case and spotted an object that looked like a needle. In 1959, 10 years after the Somerton man had been buried, a man told the police that he and three others had been on the beach on the 30th of November and seen a smartly dressed man carrying another man on his shoulders. Assuming he was just carrying a drunk friend home, they thought nothing of it. Of course, it lends credence to the idea that the poisoning happened elsewhere before the man was dumped on the beach, and accounts for the lack of evidence of convulsions or vomiting, along with the neatness of his shoes. In an interview, Kate Thompson, Jessica's daughter, said that her mother told her she'd lied to the police. She knew the identity of the Somerton man and told Kate that his identity was known to a level higher than the police force. This fits with the speculation that the Somerton man may have in fact been a spy. Jessica, who died in 2007, was said to be interested in communism and could speak Russian, although she would never tell Kate how she had learned it. Alf Boxall, to whom Jessica gave a copy of the Rubaiyat in 1945, was involved in intelligence work during the war. However, in a 1978 interview, he claimed that he never spoke about it to Jessica, and stated that she couldn't have known about it, unless somebody else told her. Numerous attempts at identifying the unknown man have been made over the years, but researchers are yet to reach a firm conclusion. There is, however, a factor which helps whittle down the possibilities. The Somerton man had two rare genetic features, hypodontia of both lateral incisors, and an enlarged upper ear hollow. These features are present in around 2% of the Caucasian population, and for a person to have both of them is very unusual. In recent years, a potential descendant has come to light. Researcher Derek Abbott was shocked to find an individual with both of the rare genetic features displayed by the Somerton man. That individual was one Robin Thompson, Jessica Thompson's son, born before her marriage to her husband Prosper. As well as having the unusual physical features of the Somerton man, Robin also pursued a career as a ballet dancer. The unknown man, you'll remember, had particularly well-developed calf muscles and oddly shaped pointed toes, which led people to suggest he may have been a dancer. Sadly, Robin died in 2009, but his widow Roma and her daughter Rachel Egan have come to believe that Prosper wasn't actually Robin's dad. DNA testing would, of course, confirm their suspicion, but the Attorney General hasn't given permission for the body of the unknown man to be exhumed. This potential connection gives the death of the Somerton man a whole new aspect. His body was found near to Jessica's house, and her reaction to seeing the cast of his face speaks volumes. Perhaps he was indeed Robin's father, and had come to confront Jessica about another man raising his child. This could be a motive for her to want to get rid of him. Or perhaps he was a spy. In June 1945, 3 years before the unknown man's death, a 34-year-old man named George Marshall was found dead in Ashton Park, Sydney. His death was believed to be suicide by poisoning. On his chest was an open copy of the Rubaiyat. Ashton Park, it must be noted, is near to Clifton Gardens, where Jessica gave Alf Boxall his copy of the Rubaiyat just 2 months later. Thank you for listening to Oddity. If you enjoyed this episode and want to support the podcast, you can do so by leaving a positive rating and review on iTunes, or by becoming a patron via patreon.com/oddity podcast. You can get in touch at Oddity Podcast on Twitter, or if you prefer email, odditypod@gmail.com. Join me, Rowan Molyneux, next time for another journey into the strange and unexplained.